The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Teacher ties with students. Harmony. Notice it doesn't say unity. Harmony is beautiful. When we get along, even if we're from a different vantage point, even if we have different thoughts or whatever, yet if it harmonizes, how beautiful that is. If it meshes together and has one message, it's very beautiful as we look at harmony. And how can we harmonize with the students and with their parents? It's beautiful to see that, to see a classroom in which there is harmony, in seeing a school in which there is harmony between the various classrooms. All teachers and students of different ages are getting along together and having a good time while they are being educated and molding characters. Just why do we teach? There was a girl who was shy and she wanted to be unnoticed. She slipped into the classroom and decided she's going to do her lessons and draw the as least amount of attention to herself as possible. One day her teacher said to her, "I know you're not used to hearing this, but you're a good student and I'm glad to have you in my classroom." And that sparked some interest in that girl in school. She turned out to be a school teacher and has taught others as well. There's a boy who entered school and he slunk down into his desk and he decided that he is going to listen enough and do enough of homework that he will pass the course, that he won't have to repeat it, and that's going to be enough because this history class is going to be very boring. But as the teacher told those interesting stories, illustrated them, and had that twinkle in his eye as he related to the students, that young man was a spark of interest in history was there. Until the year was over, the school was discontinuing the use of that textbook, and he bought the textbook. Still has it in his library, along with many other history books. He has taught himself a lot. Why do we teach? We teach so that some will teach others. Some will teach themselves. Not everyone will turn out to be a teacher. There was a man who decided to, he had a call to be a teacher. And he went out and selected his students. And he spent much time with them, day and night. They went on field trips. He took them along. They had hot lunches and cold lunches. They went out on the sea. They went up in the mountains. They went into the towns. And those men followed him. And they became like their master and founded the Christian church. He was a wonderful teacher. He connected with his students, the Lord Jesus Christ. These are the reasons that we teach, so that the faith may be perpetuated, and that people may be equipped to serve God and to pass on the faith to others. What does a classroom look like in which there is harmony between the teacher and the students? Well, if you look in the windows, or you peek in the door, or maybe you slip in the back of the room, and what you will see is you will see a teacher and the students have an exchange, a dialogue. The teacher is asking questions, and the class is answering. The class is asking questions, and the teacher is answering. And there's a dialogue going on. There's a communication. There's a learning process in which information and ideas, concepts, are being transmitted from one to the other. And they're being done in a respectful way. And they're being done in an enjoyable way, in which the teacher is enjoying the classroom, enjoying the class, and the class is enjoying the teacher. And that's wonderful harmony when that can be. The students are responding to the teacher rather than reacting. And the teacher is responding to the students rather than reacting. There is a love relationship there, where the students love the teacher. Now that's easy in first grade. Very few first graders don't love their first grade teacher. But when it gets to high school, it becomes a little more difficult. And yet, high school teachers can be loved. Teenagers can love their high school teachers. There should be a love there on that age level. In that classroom, you will see the teacher helping the students to use their thinking skills. Not just giving them the answers, but helping them to think the answers. And to use that process and leading them through. Now this, and then we consider this, and we consider, and bringing them through until they think it through themselves. And then they will master it better. The teachers are seldom showing irritability. Seldom being aggravated with the students. But they are enjoying them. And they realize that these students are the age that they are. They have their idiosyncrasies. They have their characteristics of that age. But the teacher expects that and lives with it and does not expect them to be living above their age level. What is the tie that binds the teacher and the student? It's that tie of love, which I already mentioned. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The fellowship of kindred minds is like to that above. That tie of love. If a teacher does not love the students will detect it. It cannot be hidden. A pretended love is not sincere and will not come across as meaningful, will not be interpreted as love. The teacher's attitudes go a long way in determining the mood of the classroom. The whole environment of that classroom and even of the school is affected by that teacher's attitude and the teacher's personality. If the teacher is selfish, we can expect the students to be selfish. If the teacher is bossy, we can expect the students to react to that. If the teacher is kind and loving and gentle, we can expect the students to follow in suit. The teacher's personality is reflected. The teacher's enthusiasm. If the teacher loves history and despises grammar, the students are likely to love history and despise grammar. It just will follow. If this teacher loves to diagram sentences, loves to look at the sentence structures and see how things fit together and despises history, guess what? It'll be the same in the classroom for the most part. The teacher's enthusiasm. If the teacher comes in and teaches the lessons and doesn't have much expression in the voice, the students will be drowsy. But if the teacher comes in and is excited and is interested and brings enthusiasm into the class, the students will sit up and they will listen and they will follow along. And I'm talking generally so. And sometimes you might feel enthused about a certain lesson. There's something that you have connected with in science that something else in science you have not connected with as much. And there may be some things in math or in history that you feel is drudgery to go through. I've never found extracting square roots to be exciting, but it can be made interesting to follow those precise instructions and not to miss a beat and come out with the right answer. It's just something satisfying about that, even though it's really not all that exciting. But when you finally have the right square root, isn't that exciting? We worked hard to come to this, and we followed all the rules precisely, and here we are. That's exciting. We came out right. To have that enthusiasm is critical in teaching. Now, there is a certain amount of acting. We don't want to produce actors and actresses, but there is a certain amount of that in teaching. There are some times when you will be excited, that you better be calm. One day, one of my students ran into the fire alarm contraption that sets off the fire alarm, broke the glass, and I stepped out of the office into the hall as the students were filing out of the building. I was sure I smelled smoke. And then they told me that one of the students ran into that and broke the glass, and the fire alarm had gone off accidentally. See, I was excited because I was the only one that set that off. And that day I had not set it off. It must be a fire. But if I didn't want a stampede, I needed to be calm. And I tried that, and it worked. There are other times when you might need to act excited when you're actually feeling very calm. There are times when you might be angry. You might be frustrated, but you should not let that show. There has to be a certain amount of acting. Before I was a school teacher, I went along with a 7th and 8th grade teacher on a class trip, and the students, some of them were lagging behind, others were going ahead, some were acting silly, and he had a calm way of relating to them and keeping them together as well as they did. And I was impressed by that. I could not imagine, though I raised 5 children, I could not imagine how you can do this with 20 of them and stay so calm like he was. So at one point in this class trip, the students were away from us, and it was just he and I together. And I said to him, I said, "Brother Nathan, how do you do this? I would be so irritated with them that I'm afraid I would lash out at them." And he said, "Well, there's something you need to remember in situations like this." He said, "Remember the duck." Remember the duck? What does ducks have to do with this? And he said, "Well, if you see a duck swimming across the pond, how does it look above the surface? It's so smooth. There are not even any ripples around the duck. But if you look under the surface, what do you see? Paddle, paddle, paddle. Under the surface. That duck is really paddling." And he said, "That's me." He said, "What you're seeing, you're looking above the surface." He said, "If you could look inside, you would see me paddling really hard." And when I became a teacher, the Lord brought that memory into my mind so often. "Brother Lester, remember the duck." Now, you don't have to waddle, but remember to keep that serene appearance above the water, regardless of how you're paddling underneath. What can you do to bring a peaceful atmosphere, a loving and respectful atmosphere to your classroom? Does it require an unconditional respect for authority, that you are the teacher and they must respect you regardless of what happens, what you do, that they just have to say, "Yes, sir," "Yes, ma'am," and that you are the authority and they understand that and there's no questioning it? Does it require a consistent discipline that you never change, that your rules one day are the same as they are the other, and that you never change your rules, you never change that things are always the same? Same punishment prescribed for the same offense, regardless of who does it or what it is or how often it has happened. It's in there. You can see just what to do about each offense. Does it require that you have significant consequences? That if you step out of line, it's going to hurt, we guarantee. It's just going to hurt. You're going to be very sorry if you step out of line. Does that do it? Well, no. We do need to have consistency. We need to have respect for authority, and we need to be consistent. But these things don't nurture. What they do is they make boundaries in which we need to operate, but they don't nurture. What we need is a good relationship between the students and the teacher. We need to have an openness, a sharing, a working together, a relationship of being teammates with the students. And then we will have this environment in which this situation will exist, of an open relationship, of enjoying one another's role in life. Can you be the student's friend? The answer to that is a qualified yes. You can be their friend, but there needs to be some qualifications with that. What kind of friend will you be? You may smile at them before Thanksgiving and after. You may laugh with them. You may laugh at yourself. And in certain situations, you may even, if the relationship is open, be able to laugh at them. But in a respectful way. And we need to know, when are those situations in which we can laugh with one another, or even at one another? I would caution, be careful in laughing at your students, that you do not offend them. That can be very dangerous. Depends who the student is. You have to be their friend in order to have an open relationship. But what kind of a friend is it? Is it a friend where you're just one of the students? No, that's not going to work. Is it a friendship that means that you're just their buddy? No. It means a friendship in which they have a regard for your person, that they care about you, and that you care about them. And there's that love, there's that caring, that mutual sharing of feelings for one another, in which we respect one another. And not a feeling of affection necessarily, but a feeling of high regard for one another. I received the mail each day at school and went through it and dispensed it to the various classrooms, to the teachers that it pertained to. And one day I received an invitation to go to a teacher's convention. And the leading line for the convention was to come to the convention and learn how to spend less than 70% of your time on discipline. And I looked at that. Less than 70%? Surely they mean less than 7%. But no, I read 70%. How to spend less than 70% of your time on discipline. Well, I'm not even tempted to go to that. And so I decided, I'm going to use this. And so I held it up. I showed it to my students in my classroom. And I said, students, I want to thank you that I am not even tempted to go to this convention. It's because of your respect for me and for the school. And the relationship that we have, that they would have to really lower that percentage for me to be interested in going there. That I'm not interested in going to this convention. Relationships do a lot in releasing, in avoiding tension and causing stress in your teaching. Majority of our time should not be on discipline, but rather on relationships. Now, what should your rules be for your classroom? You may have a good set of rules. You may have a few. I would encourage having a few rules rather than a lot of them. And be general in your rules. I like to use a Bible verse for my classroom rules, and it's found in 1 Thessalonians 4:11. Study to be quiet. There's two rules already. The first one is to study. The second one is to be quiet. So there we have the first two rules. The next one comes there in that verse, and to do your own business. You're not to do your neighbor's business. You're not to be involved in what's going on the other side of the aisle from you, on either side or behind you or in front of you. It's not your business. Your business is right there at your desk. Your business is to respond in class. That's your business. If the seventh graders are doing one thing and the ninth graders are doing another and you're in eighth grade, then your business is eighth grade and not seventh and ninth. But do your own business and pay attention to what is going on in where you have responsibility. Study, be quiet, do your own business, work with your own hands, no cheating. You work with your own hands. You do your own lessons, your own assignments. There's your rules, and it follows up with this as we commanded you. And at times, I'm going to give you assignments. I'm going to tell you what to do, and you are to follow those instructions. And there's our classroom rules. They're all in the Bible. If you don't know how they apply, I will be glad to explain them. If they need further defining, we'll define them. But everything that, all the rules are going to stem back to this verse. It's going to have to do with quietness. It's going to have to do with you doing your own business, working with your own hands, and studying. That's what it's going to be. And so there are our rules. And they're all in that one verse. Some years I would ask them, do you think I was hired to make you behave? How do you feel about that? Were you hired to make your students behave? I thought, I was not hired to make you behave. I was hired to educate you. Now, if you don't know how to behave, I can educate you in that. That's our role. So there we go. You know, just be general, but have the application there. Let them understand what is allowed and what is not. Scaring the students into good behavior doesn't last, because soon their fear will be gone. There needs to be a respect, respect for authority. Pray for your students. Take them to the throne of grace in prayer. Kneel at their desk. Kneel at your desk. Kneel by your bedside. Pray as you're lying in your bed. Pray as you're driving down the road. Pray for your students. Pray for them individually. Pray for them by name. And take them and their personalities and their interests and their concerns to the Lord in prayer. Dwell with them according to knowledge. What is going on in their home life? What is going on in the classroom between the boys and the girls? What is happening there? Be very observant, and then dwell with them according to knowledge. If there's a click going on, several clicks, be aware of it. And how does that relate to the things that your students are doing? There needs to be a respect by the students for the teacher. And the teacher also needs to respect the students. We are to honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward, to those who are hard to get along with. That applies not only to slaves or servants and their masters, but it applies to every area in life. Your students may be complaining about a bossy mother, a domineering father, but this verse applies to that. And if you hear them talk about their authorities other than you in a disrespectful way, address it and bring it to their attention that they are to honor other authorities. And then you model that for them and showing respect for spiritual leaders and family leaders and the authorities of the land. And then conduct yourself in a respectable way as well. We are professionals as teachers, so we ought to have that professional aura about ourselves, that I am a professional. That doesn't mean that we need to act in a stiff manner. It just means we don't act in childish ways. We act like a professional would act and dress like a professional. And they will then in turn be more likely to respect us. One evening, Martha and I were going home from church, and I had the church van, which has the name of our mission on at least three sides of it. We're near our house when I made a left-hand turn onto our street. And about as soon as I made that turn, there were red and blue lights behind me. And so I pulled over to the curb. Now that is very embarrassing, because I'm right outside my door. All my neighbors know me. And there's the name of our church on three sides, at least, of that van. Here I am. and I am so embarrassed already. What did I do wrong? I had no idea what I did wrong. But I soon found out. I used my turn signal, but I did not turn it on soon enough. I thought I did. But that little lady policeman, who stood barely 5 feet high, was talking down to me from about 9 or 10 feet. And she gave me a thorough tongue lashing for not having turned on my turn signal before I did. Almost ran in the back of you. Well, why were you following so closely? No, that's not what I said. I said, yes, ma'am. And I respected her for her authority. But as soon as the window was rolled up and we started down the street, Martha said to me, she didn't have to be so snippy. And I agreed. You see, we respected her for her authority, but we did not respect her for her person. And we can do the same thing in which our students will say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. They will respect us for our authority, but they will not respect us for our person. And that's really what we want. We want them to respect us beyond where our authority reaches. Does the teacher need to earn the student's respect? Many people will answer yes. The teacher needs to earn the student's respect. Okay, I'd like to follow that up with another question. If the answer to that is yes, then what about the first day of school? This teacher has not had enough of time, even before the first bell rings, to earn the student's respect. Right? So the students don't have to respect yet because the teacher has not had time to earn their respect. So they can do whatever they want. So the second day or third day, or when has the teacher had enough time to earn their respect? Now, let's qualify this now. The students, even before the first bell rings on the first day of school, need to respect that teacher for the teacher's authority. But as time goes on, the teacher needs to gain on that respect and transfer some of that respect for authority into respect for his person. And so as time goes on, that respect needs to grow for the person and not just for the authority. How will that happen? That will happen if the teacher is fair with the students. If the teacher has a rigid set of rules for the students, then the teacher will need to live by a rigid set of rules. If there's no food in the trash, the teacher may not put food in the trash. If students are not to use their cell phones during school hours, then the teacher should not use the cell phone during class time at least. And maybe not in front of the students. But there needs to be a respect for the rules. The rules are the rules. And we live by that. If there is a loose application of rules, then of course the teacher has freedom to live loosely as well. But will there be order? And so we need to have the right set of rules and the application thereof. And we need to be fair about those rules. What are the building blocks for a good relationship with the students? Well, we need to find out about the students, find out about their families, their siblings, parents' occupation, the involvements, the things they like, places they've been, things they've done. Now, we don't need to be nosy about these things, but observant. What do they talk about at lunchtime and at recess time and before school or after school? How are they adjusting to life? And to make that connection with them. You know, childhood can be quite a troublesome time because their bodies are always changing from year to year. Their self-perception and concept is changing. Their concept of themselves is changing their awareness of themselves is changing. And their attitudes about life, the way they express themselves, is always in flux. And when they are in their adolescence, there are things happening in their bodies that they are not in control of. And they're trying to find out how to, especially the boys, to control their voice, how to use it, and other things that are taking place as well. And can we connect with them and help them to adjust to these constant series of changes year by year, and to help them through those fears and those anxieties and those feelings of inadequacy and all of those things, and to guide them through those troublesome years of childhood. And there may be other things that are involved in their lives during these periods of time, in which there could be family conflict. Maybe mother and father are not getting along and would rather not live together. And here are the children in this unstable situation. And can we reach out to them and care about them and show them that there is some stability in life somewhere, and that they can achieve it regardless of whether their parents have achieved it or not? Can we help that child who has lost a father or lost a mother, who has lost a brother or sister through death or through desertion? Can we reach out to them and care about them and walk with them through life? Personal communication to them on their own level. If the most important thing to them is their cat at home, ask about the cat. That little kitty. How's it doing? The new bike that they got for Christmas or whatever. Talk to them on their own level, relating to them. Now, what do we do then if relationships have broken down? We have tried hard to maintain a good relationship with this student, and yet the student is turning a cold shoulder to us. The student seems angry. The student seems so uncooperative. What can we do? Well, we can discipline. We can crack the whip. We can make it tough for them. Or we can communicate with them and just find out, what is the problem? What's going on? Why is it changing? Is there something that I am doing that's causing you to be that? Have I said anything that offended you? Have I done anything? And I don't think that the teacher needs to assume right away that as soon as there's a bad relationship that I've done something, it's my fault. But just maybe there is, and we haven't been sensitive enough to know what it is and to find out what has caused it. We can threaten punishment, or we can question and find out. Is somebody else doing something that's irritating you? Is somebody else doing something that's influencing you to be disrespectful? Is somebody else finding fault with what's going on here, and you're sort of taking their side? Or is it you? What is it that's going on here? To find out, to have a one-on-one talk with that student, to find out what the source is. You know, we can deal with the symptoms without dealing with the root. And until we deal with the root, we're probably not going to solve anything. We need to discover what that root is and work with it to find out just what it is. Maybe we have done something that has irritated or offended the student. And suppose they tell us what it was. Should we defend it then? And say, well, I didn't mean to do that. You took it wrong. No, apologize for that. Even if they did take it wrongly, to apologize, I'm sorry that I did that and that caused you to think that way. And to apologize to them for that, they will respect that. In most cases, we respect that you have agreed with them that you should not have done that thing. You can also ask them if they tell you what it is, and maybe it's nothing you have done, Maybe they have none. Maybe it's something else that's going on in the classroom between students. And ask them for ideas. What do you think can be done about this? How can it be solved? What can your part be in coming up with a remedy for this situation? Relationships are the key to a good year. We might discipline strongly. That might not be the thing that does it. What really will help is a relationship. Another thing that it can affect the conduct of a student is that slow students may slow down the class. And how do you relate to those slow learners? Should you hold the whole class back while you deal with this one or two slow learners? And so the ones who are fast learners and who are intelligent and can pick things up quickly, they have nothing to do and they become mischievous because they have no guided activities. How do you deal with that? Well, there can be an adjustment of assignments, which some students are not required to do as much as others. Those slow ones do the most important questions in the math lesson, and if they have mastered the concepts, that's good enough without doing the whole lesson. Whereas that fast one, well, they need more to keep them occupied. Let them do the whole lesson. Another thing is to do some of those examples in class so that the lesson, the assignment is not as large. A slow student may be considered lazy at times when laziness is not the problem. It's the lack of ability to learn quickly. There are other times when a student will be slow simply because they are not as energized as someone else. And how do you tell the difference? And so you might have a student who is not producing very rapidly, not producing, is lagging behind, and all of a sudden one day he does wonderful work and gets 100% and has the lesson done early, and wow, you say, you know what, you did that so well today, I believe you could do that every day. Was that the way you are in your teaching? Do you always teach that way? You always teaching at 100%? Nobody always operates at 100%, do we? And we might peak for a day or for a week, and we just can't keep up the pace and we slack off a little bit. But to expect a student who suddenly does so much better at one period that you could always do that is not usually fair to that student. I'd also like to caution that sometimes we might have a student coming into our class that the former teachers have said that this student is a slow learner and you should not give them the full assignments. You need to cut out social studies, and sometimes there's a place for that. But there are different things that come into play in a student's life. And I always made it a matter of choice for myself that I would evaluate each student as they came into my room, regardless of what the parents and the former teachers had said, that I would take a fresh evaluation of it. I had one girl who came into my room whose parents told her that she was dumb. They just said it like that to her, that you're kind of dumb. And her former teachers told her that she's a slow learner, and so they're going to take it easy on her, and they did. She came into my room with very little involvement in social studies and a little bit in science, but other than that, she was a reading and math and language student, basically what she got. And I observed her and worked with her, and I sensed that I don't think she is a slow learner. I found ways to give her praise, and you know what? She would do anything for me. And she opened up, and she was right with the rest, did all the assignments. And the other students who looked at her ever since first grade, and she was in seventh, they looked at her and said, she's doing that? They couldn't believe it. What happened? I don't want to brag about that, but I was very satisfied that I had the opportunity to open her up. We need to remember that Students do change. Maybe she was a slow learner, but something happened there. Maybe it wasn't me at all. Suddenly the light came on, and she changed. And so give the students a break and help them, give them an opportunity to begin to open up and to take a new view at life. Lack of confidence can be a problem in students, and what can we do to encourage them? Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And there's some truth to that. Is it possible to achieve more with a student than what the parents have? Yes, sometimes. Sometimes there are things in the home that the student will not respond to the parents, but they love the teacher and will do what the teacher says. That's a wonderful experience for the teacher. It can cause some irritability with the parents, even some jealousy, and we can understand that. But if that is a possibility for you, go ahead and make and capitalize on it and help that student to excel. There are ways to call misconduct in your classroom and to relate to it without the whole classroom knowing. You know how to tell a student to be quiet, don't you, without using any words? That will work, won't it? They get the message. All right, I'm pleased. A good smile. How about stop it? That work? Just a facial expression. They cut it out. There are ways to, or sit up, or sit down. And the whole class doesn't have to know it, but you caught the attention. God says, I will guide you with my eye. And you can do that as well if you do it correctly, do it efficiently. Ultimately, you need to give the ultimatum, the verdict, as to what will happen if misconduct continues. Give an ultimatum. Either you conform or this will be coming. Relationships are essential to achieve good classroom behavior and attitudes. They are foundational to student achievement. They are indispensable in being an effective teacher, and they are central to creating an environment of nurturing students. When we have developed a relationship with our students, the end of the school year will not come without some emotion. And when we come to the last moments of that last day, we'll be singing the last verse of that song. When we asunder part, it gives us keenest pain, but we shall still be joined at heart and hope to meet again. I'm looking forward to seeing you come with your wife, with your children. I'm looking forward to hearing you preach or teach a Sunday school class. I'm looking forward to meeting again. And it's not like something I saw one time where the last day of school was portrayed and the students were going out of the school and they're, yay, yay, school's over. And they got on the buses and the next picture was the buses were going down the road and the teachers were, hooray, it's over. No. When we asunder part, it gives us keenest pain. Oh, we'd like to hold their hands some more. We'd like to just have them in our care some more. But it's time to let them go. Why? Because we've developed a relationship which was missing in those two pictures that I saw. Relationship was gone. God bless you to develop a relationship with your students.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.